Welcome to the Being Curious Show. I'm Brian Mariani, founder of No Shift Own.
And I'm Kelly Wagner, publisher of Edge Magazine. Our show is about curiously connecting teachers and seekers on a wide range of topics in a safe space. Few topics will be off limits, and we have some amazing guests to share with you.
Our intention is that our conversations will spark your own curiosity to create a life that lights you up and inspires you to be kind, thoughtful, open-minded to yourself and others.
We are on AM 950, Sundays at 2 p.m. and all podcast platforms. So, Brian, what are you curious about today?
So Brian might be really curious, but he's stuck in a snowstorm on an Amtrak train without power. I mean, does that get any better than that? Like, right? But we keep going because we have some awesome people and awesome guests today. I do want to thank, you know when you can put a bat call out to a really special person like 45 minutes before you go on air and they jump in because they know who we're interviewing. And well, she's also just an amazing friend of the Edge, a friend of the show. Elizabeth Sullivan is back. We are so blessed to have you. Thank you so much for being here. Okay.
Thanks for having me. Delighted to be here with both you and JB.
And she's coming to us live from the Ohm Center in St. Paul. Got a little call out to Sharon and the Egg before the interview. When we were talking with JD, we did a little tour of the Harmonic Egg, and we almost had Elizabeth come to us live from the Egg, which we might have to do that sometime. Okay,
I think we should.
I think that would be fun. Like, right?
But the eggs are supporting their harmonic resonance, and they're supporting the show.
Oh yeah, and it was really funny. I could tell when you were in the Egg. I was like, ooh, okay, totally, right? Here we go.
It shifts everyone's frequency really quick.
Okay, you guys, it is my absolute honor to bring back JD Slackart. He is you have these people cross your paths and you just smile and you're super excited. JD's one of those people, and I've just been looking forward to this second interview, because the first one was kind of an express one, and we had him on, and I'll be honest with you, like, interview 101 faux pas. Don't read the book of the person that you're interviewing before interviewing. That is like, that's classy with a K. So I went right away and got the book and read it. And I have it here to prove everybody, like, it's here. It's here. Okay. So we're going to launch into the book. But welcome, JD. How are you doing? Welcome back to the show.
Oh, Kelly, Elizabeth, it's such a privilege to be here. You guys are some of my favorite people I've met in my whole journey throughout this book. This has been a date like circled and starred for me to return to the show. I think what you guys are doing is incredible. I think you guys share incredible stories and have incredible guests on. And I'm also just a fan of you guys. So to be back is a real privilege. So thank you for having me.
Well, fantastic. What have now, your last show aired in November of 2022. And your book, Darling, You're Not Alone. Hold on. I got to pull it up again. It was funny. We're doing the pre-interview and JD's like, oh, you have the hard copy. I'm like, of course. I love hard copies. I don't know why. And then you can tell the way
that
I
have. That means something to an author, though.
Does it?
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's a deal.
Right?
JD
and
can explain
and you
it,
can tell, you can tell this puppy's been read.
I can see that those pages are weathered
right?
with tears and ink. And,
yep. Yeah. You got it. Like, right? That's, you can't make
Kelly
that up.
Kelly almost didn't hang in there, JD.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. So we're going to touch on that, I promise you, because I got a little impatient reading the end of the book. And but then the last sentences, I laughed, I cried, I was fist bumping. I was so excited. And then I knew we had to get JD back. So what have you been up to from November? I know this book is gaining momentum and it's touching people's lives. It is getting out there. It's like this beautiful, I'm sorry for people that are just listening on air, but it's this swirl of just goodness and
Kelly
love.
Is moving her
I'm
hands
moving my hands
in the air.
Right in the air. Kelly's very
the swirl.
This is the swirl. And I'm not letting JD talk. So the floor is yours. What have you been up to, my friend?
Yeah, and I'm so glad you enjoyed the book. You know, it's a very emotional story. I know that for people that are taking the time to really dive into this novel, It's one that, you know, can really bring out a lot in people. And I think something that I have to try to remind myself as the writer is that, you know, when you create a story like Darling, You're Not Alone, you have it for years and years in your everyday life. And what's interesting about that is, like, you sort of don't get the same experience that someone does as a reader, where they go through it in, like, let's say a month's time or 2 months' time. Rather, I have 3 years to sort of almost like process and deal with each turn, everything that happens from the really highs to the really lows. So it doesn't have that as an intense, just immediate punch, where when, yeah, you sit down and read this book, like, for the first time front to back, and believe me, I had some people that finish it in just 24 hours. They would call me and just be shocked, stunned. And I wouldn't recommend that. I think that's sort of a easy way to sort of miss maybe some of the, you know, the things I intended while writing it. But I do think that, yeah, it's been amazing since November to see this book get into the hands of so many different people from so many different walks of life, from not just around the country, but around the world. I mean, I've had people that I've read the book in Italy and France and Australia. And I do my best to try and give as much as I can to those that are interested in hearing more about, you know, where these ideas came from and why I wrote it. But it is getting to the point where that's becoming harder and harder to keep up with. And something I do try to do is also spend time away from all of it. And, like, been going skiing a little bit, seeing some friends and family, because, you know, this has been a book I've been working on for a long time with my head down. And so I did want to take some time to process it and step away. And now I'm coming back into it in this last few weeks. So yeah, it's been fun for sure.
So I'm not an author, but, and I have two authors on air with me right now. So you have this lead character, Phoenix. How do you say goodbye to him? Like, how do you do that? Because, I mean, you birth this, you birth this being, because I look at it that he's not just a character in a book. I mean, right? And and how do you say goodbye at the end? And I'm assuming, like, actors have the same thing on a set of a movie, and but you created this and you put it down, and then you have to say goodbye. So maybe it is just goodbye for now, and it's just kind of a pause, and he's always with you. But I almost think that is Phoenix kind of like a spirit guide for you, or is he a Elizabeth? Do you know where I'm going with this?
I do, and probably JD does too. I mean, once you birth and create a character, sometimes I even get curious as writers, if you're not writing some past life aspect or future life aspect of your own soul into being, and in communication with that other aspect of your soul, meaning that's coming from a concept around kind of quantum physics and multidimensional healing, where our soul is larger than this expression, right? And so we have spirit guides that are aspects of our soul. We have past lives that are aspects of our soul, which bring in some of our past mastery that we can use in this lifetime. So yeah, is Phoenix like a spirit guide, someone you tune into? Do you feel like he was maybe became a part of you, or was a part of you that you were drawing on?
Or all of the above?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the best way I've been able to describe it is, and I think, you know, through my first book, I didn't really understand why I was so sad at the completion of, you know, so my first book's called Moonflower. It's a fictional novel that I wrote, kind of inspired by a lot of real people in my life. And that book was published in 2018. Darling, You're Not Alone is, you know, a much different book in that all of the experiences and things that I wrote about came from a place of pure fiction. Like, I didn't have, you know, there was no Phoenix in my life that existed. But I do think, to answer your guys' question, it was incredibly hard. And it's something that I would almost like label as like a postpartum depression, where once you do finish the book and it is like released from you and you no longer have that character's voice in your head, it's really hard. And it's definitely something I went through and I've had to get better at, you know, in terms of like kind of demarcating, like, okay, this project is done in terms of writing it, but now I'm getting to talk about it and share it with, you know, people I care about, like you guys. And you guys have your own experience with Phoenix now, and he's someone that exists in your lives, and we get to sort of share that. So I try to think about it more in terms of like, okay, he's not just mine any longer. Now he exists to other people and will continue to forever and ever and ever. And that's a pretty cool thing. But do I miss spending all my time with him every single day and writing? Like, for sure. I mean, I think any writer who, you know, has created a story as emotional as Darling, You're Not Alone would agree with that. And, you know, to speak on it from that spirituality kind of past life angle, I think for Phoenix, a lot of the things that I just, you know, had that desire to create in Darling came from sort of his insecurities with the world. Like, I think I share a lot of those with just like sometimes the disappointment we have in people we care about, or people maybe we don't even know, but we sort of like project this disappointment of, man, I wish they worked harder, or I wish they saw the world as a better place. And I hate seeing people that are so down all the time. And then obviously Phoenix goes through this, you know, growth throughout the novel where he learns that there's so much more going on than he ever realized. That's a lesson I try to remind myself of a lot. And I think I identify with that a lot with Phoenix, whereas there's, you know, certain aspects of him that I don't necessarily feel like I can relate to as much, but I wanted to create. And I mean, I'm happy to talk more about this in any way you guys see fit. But, you know, I just met someone who read the book and who I'd never met before and got introduced to. And they were telling me that they felt like their life was Phoenix, like that was a character that represented their entire childhood and they identified with so thoroughly. And, that was pretty cool and pretty amazing to hear someone say that, who I had no relationship with, talk about how Phoenix really, you know, identified with them. And I think that's how you try to get over the missing of your characters is the sharing aspect.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what I get curious about, especially with our young people being so much more in, like, I think everyone's intuitive, right? And the kids coming on the planet at this time, as we make this transition into higher frequency, are even more intuitive and sentient. And so I wonder, like, characters like Phoenix, who probably are not only picking up their own stuff, right, but like the people around them, the collective around them. And I feel like as adolescents, learning that is a tool that you can sense and feel what's happening around you, but it's not always all your stuff. And learning that boundary of like using that intuitive gift well, like clairsentient well, without it flooding a kid is something I get curious about, having young kids, teenagers.
Yeah, because it can be debilitating, right? I think that's something that I tried to write about in the book, is like, it isn't always something that for Phoenix is a beneficial gift that he has. And it's something that takes away from, sometimes ignorance is bliss, and he isn't able to maintain or keep in mind the everyday happenings of his world. And, you know, that's not to give away the ending for people that are out there and haven't read it yet, but that was one of the things I attempted to sort of recreate in the book, is like, giving the characters that had gone through this just insane roller coaster throughout the novel, almost like there's nothing more important than taking the girl to the dance, or you know, getting home and having that dinner with your mom, or anything. Just those kind of simple little beauties of life. I think in the end, when it's all said and done, those are the things you remember the most.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It really is. Oh my gosh, you guys. So we're already, by the way, like knocking on the door of wrapping up segment one, which is just like, wow, you just like, I know this always happens. Like,
we'll have to rebook a third interview.
Yeah, we're going to have to rebook. Okay. Okay, you guys. So JDWritesBooks.com is his website. I just want to lead us into the next segment with that. And something that, you know, as I've flashed this like four times, I'm going to go for five. Darling, you're not alone.
Showing the book.
Showing the book. Oh, sorry. Thank you very much. What would I do without Elizabeth? JD is also coming up with a line of hats, and they say you are not alone. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in segment two. He also, the handwritten letters, we're going to talk about that. And then I have a question about a couple things in the book. So this is going to be a fun one. Hey, it's Being Curious with Brian and Kelly and JD and Elizabeth. And, you know, the gang's all here, except Brian, who's stuck in a snowstorm, which we're going to just
thinking
send
about
him love.
You, Brian,
yeah, thinking
you
about
here.
Everyone, let's do a little whoop whoop for Mr. Brian. I'm sending him love.
Big love.
Big love all around. Thank you so much. We're coming to segment two. It's Kelly Being Curious, AM 950. We'll be back. And this is when Brian normally jumps in with this beautiful little transition. But no, you get me this week. Hey, guys, it's Kelly, Elizabeth, and JD. We are back, and we are talking about JD's latest book, Darling, You Are Not Alone, one of my new favorite books that I just couldn't get enough of. And we were making fun of my, yeah, you can tell it was in the bathtub. Like, right? Like, it's awesome.
Weathered.
It's a weathered book. And
I love it.
Yeah, it's great. I
never understand people who prefer the audio, not the audio, the electronic Kindle version over the paper. I'm a big,
you know, I'm for sure the same. Like, I need a paperback, hard copy. I want to write on it. I want to, you know, reread it, go back to it. But I have to say, like, a lot of people that are great readers, and you know, no offense to them out there, but they love the Kindle. And it's more of like an economic thing,
yeah,
or ergonomic, I guess would be the word, because yeah, you can travel with it and take 10 books with you. And
that's true. That's,
you know,
true.
That's their thought. And a lot of industry folks I've found, so like agents and producers and direct, like they're always just email it to me, Kindle PDF. Cause I think they get such an inbound. But yeah,
that's
people
true.
That are more just everyday readers love the,
I just love the tactileness of it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean, I love the audiobooks when like there's a beautiful voice on it, you know, that has a different tactileness.
Yeah.
Nothing against the Kindle readers. I love you too. But
yeah.
For me, my personal preference is the like.
Yeah. My same for sure.
I love that you tapped into the voice aspect, because mm-hmm. I just finished Spare, the Prince Harry mm-hmm. book.
And what do you think?
He loves his wife. He, like, if every spouse had a spouse that loved their spouse the way that he honors his wife, is amazing. Right? Oh, did you get it?
That's a good thing to take away.
Right?
Someone just handed it to me, literally.
Literally? I wanted to hear his voice. Well, because the hard copy, and I was actually in an airport about to buy the hard copy. Oh, this is interesting. So I'm in Las Vegas. We went to Batista's Hole in the Wall, and we met this couple, and I was with some friends, and they were over here from the UK, and they wanted to ask us about like Trump, and I mean they wanted to ask us about all these American things. So of course we're curious. The book, and I was like, oh, it's really funny. I was just about to go buy the Spare book, and they just locked up on, and they had their very strong point of view, which I'm not going to share what it was, but very strong point of view on yeah. Harry, and they were very, very pro supporting the crown, supporting the queen. Anything mm-hmm. against it was just not in there. I mean, they just
yeah.
they all of that, just like this very quiet, lovely couple just like lit up and just started to like really talk about it.
Well, it challenges the collective belief, and I think if that's what you've organized around,
right,
you're going to defend that until you can be curious enough to shift and question whatever that is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Plenty of controversy around it.
Right. There's two sides to every story. We don't.
Or 360.
Right. And it was just, it was very interesting. I thought it was well written. Whoever was his partner in crime on it, He very descriptive, and I just it was a good listen. It was one that really I got up and I would be excited to work out because I could listen to it. So it's I thought it was worth the read to look at it through a curious lens, and it's what he and his wife feel is their truth. Of course, there's two sides to every story, but you know, it might be worth checking out. Okay, we won't spend any more time on it, but
okay, let's go back to the fact that JD has made hats.
Yes. Okay, and that's Elizabeth is a huge hat girl. What inspired you, JD, for the hats?
As a person that has worked with alopecia, I love a good hat. So go for it.
Yeah, I'm a hat person myself, of course. But I, the You're Not Alone hats are releasing March 15th, re-releasing. I had a different release date for them earlier. They sold out in like a week. So backed by popular demand, I have the You're Not Alone hats, trucker hats available on my website, jdwritesbooks.com. And yeah, I think the idea for that was just, I think in the world we're in today, which is an amazing trend, people want to enjoy the message they find in books or even movies and TV shows on a daily basis and in the world they live in. Like, I'm a huge fan of the show Stranger Things.
Me too.
I immediately looked for a shirt when I heard the line "Friends don't lie," and I started wearing it all the time because I was like, "That's just a great message." I think it's something I want to promote and like just have, and I love that shirt. I wear it constantly, so I felt like so much of "Darling, You're Not Alone" is this idea that you're not alone. Like, no matter what your beliefs are or where you land spiritually, I think we can all support the idea that we're in this together, and life is a beautiful thing. And I want the hats to sort of represent that outside of the book itself.
That's awesome.
Who's your favorite character?
It's an incredible sentiment to remember that you're not alone. Sorry.
Yeah, simple. Very simple.
Nope.
I mean, I think it's an important one. I think half the time people have to remember that they are more than this body. Like, they're a light being. And then to remember that they're not alone, like they're surrounded by other light beings, like beyond people's personality, can we remember our true nature?
Well, yeah, and there's two sides to every story. And that's what we touched on a little bit about the spare book is it's like, okay, so for people that did not hear our original show, I want to take a step back because I should have done it since the beginning of the show, but I didn't. JD, give us a little synopsis of the book because we just launched writing because we're friends and we're just trying to kind of jumping in and we're like, oh, hello. And then I'm realizing that we're in segment two and we haven't even told people really like that overarching discussion about the book outside of the fact that they just need to read it.
And JD, that Phoenix is amazing.
I love Phoenix. I miss him. I'm jealous for anybody out there who gets to read this book and meet him for the first time. But just a quick rundown is the book is a fictional novel set in the year 1999 about a kid named Phoenix Ivor, who is a sort of struggling with social anxiety and depression and kind of just a lot of things that at 15 years old, I think a lot of kids deal with when he's sort of thrusted into this catastrophic event at his high school, Darling High School. And this all sort of takes place pretty early on in the book. But then the remainder of the novel and sort of where the idea and message of Darling, You're Not Alone comes from is Phoenix ends up taking on this sort of preternatural or spiritual undertaking where he's given the opportunity to speak with people and sort of have this communication with people once they're gone. And the rest of the book, Phoenix goes on this journey where he's almost like a medium in a sense of delivering mail from heaven to people that have passed away. And yeah, it's pretty touching book, Darling, You're Not Alone. And that You're Not Alone concept is meant to speak towards the idea that, we've all been through personal tragedy and we all, people out there we miss, so.
Well, it's You're Not Alone on the earth plane, but you're also not alone everywhere else.
Right.
How did I say that and say it totally like normal? I didn't go totally crazy Kelly on that. I was like, yeah, everywhere else. Like, right? Okay. So I want to talk about handwritten letters because thank you and gratitude is very, very, very important to JD. and myself and Elizabeth, and it's free. Like, let's just talk about taking a moment of writing a handwritten letter.
And how much that can counter our anxiety, right?
Right.
Like, anyway, go.
Well, did you know that 98% of mail is actually being opened again because we're so inundated with the electronic that when we get mail again, people are like, oh, but then you get a handwritten, beautiful note and it's just even more special than ever before. So talk to us, JD, about how to say thank you and a couple different ways that you feel that saying thank you and the gratitude is important.
Yeah, well, I'll say quickly, and you know, it's something I've spoken about in other interviews. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you guys, but that's actually how my career as a writer began. I used to write letters to this girl I was sort of madly in love with, and she was
sort of
abroad.
Madly in love. Sort of madly in love. Yeah. Okay, just checking. Just
I know. I'm not sure how the sort of madly.
I was just tiptoeing there.
Okay, good.
But she was studying abroad when we were in college together, and so I used to write her letters like once a week. And I eventually sort of figured out it was like the thing I looked forward to the most every week was sitting down to write this letter. And I sort of decided eventually, you know what, like maybe I should stop writing this one person letters every week and actually write a book. And so I did. And that's where I got the idea for Moonflower. And as that sort of bridged my, you know, and launched my career, I wanted to make that a big part of Darling, You're Not Alone as well. And yeah, I think handwriting letters is maybe the most important thing you can do for someone. But it's also something that's so, it returns to you tenfold. Like the power and spirit behind taking the time to do that is so relaxing and calming for your own self that I find even, you know, I'll do it, for that reason as well. It's like, if I feel like I'm moving too quickly or things are happening at a speed I can't control, I'll just slow myself down and write a letter to a friend. And then I find that I'm much more centered and ready to move forward.
And, you know, to your point, in the book, it's, you know, it opens Phoenix's supernatural gifts, right?
Like, yeah, it does. It's a huge part of his understanding of, well, I think there's going to be skeptics no matter what, right? And I think with heaven, there obviously is a absurdly kind of strong amount of pushback for that to exist and be real. So I wanted to write a book that had that, but I needed there to be some sort of proof that even a non-believer would say, well, there's no denying that this exists. And so the letter serves as like this real proof that, okay, someone wrote this after they were gone. And how else could this be true if they're, you know, there has to be a heaven. And Phoenix is sort of this character that, yeah, he's the skeptic. He's like, obviously there's no heaven, you know, I haven't seen anything to show me that. And then boom, here he's given this opportunity. So, yeah, I thought the letter would be a good way to do that.
And you started hashtag You're Not Alone letter writing campaign. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So that's just the idea that once again, like the hats, to take sort of the message of Darling, You're Not Alone out into the real world and challenge people when they finish the book to say, hey, could you go ahead now and write a letter to someone, doesn't matter who, and just start it with You're Not Alone, and take it from there. And it could be as long or as short as you'd like, but the idea would be that just sending that letter to someone could be an incredibly, you know, healing thing. And yeah, I've actually been seeing just this like barrage of people that are sharing their letters with me and uploading them on the darlingyournotalone.com website. Where I have an opportunity to interact and let people know, you know, how much I appreciate it. And yeah, it's a really beautiful, you know, show of affection to see and read all these letters after the book's been released. It's been pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, JD has five ways to write a thank you letter. The first one is handwrite it. Number two is say thanks. Three, you're not alone. And then tell us about sealing it with a kiss.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one is more metaphorical, just being the storyteller in me. I wanted to sort of give people this idea that, like, yeah, you sealing it with a kiss, you know, you could obviously literally seal it with a kiss. But I think what I meant more so is, like, make sure to put a part of yourself in that, in, you know, something that that person will only recognize in you. Like if it's, you know, if you write a heart at the end, or if you, you know, have a little design you put, or anything that's a trademark thing, that's what Seal It With a Kiss would mean.
Well, and keeping it simple, and you don't have to write a novel. You just, because I'm actually, I brought, right. I brought these in. These are my little notes that I,
Holly's holding up.
I said, yes, I'm holding up my little notes. And I love this, just enough space to be able to just write, even just, I'm thinking of you. Thank you so much. In gratitude. You can use whatever kind of pen you want to, but just this little message of just being like, oh, someone cares. Someone's thinking about me. I just think it's really important. And the, and your final one was post it and use a nice stamp. Oh my gosh, I am a stamp freak.
So am I. Big fan of buying lots of Forever
stamps. Yeah. Oh my God, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Did you know they had the Giving Tree stamps? And they ran out. I know, they ran out right away. I've been at my post office like freaking out because I wanted to buy them out. And they're like, we got them in. We had them for 2 days and they sold out. You can't find them. But the
my favorite was the snowy day ones.
Oh yeah, those are good.
Ezra Keats Jacks.
Right. I just do different ones for the, and then I actually just lost, I have a thing of random stamps and I just lost it and I have to clean my office and find it. I know. My husband's just like, oh, the, it's like, I can't just do the normal Forever stamps. I've got to do different ones. So I love that you're like, and number five is be thoughtful on your stamp. I mean, like, oh my gosh. It's fantastic. I mean,
the little things are important. I think any writer can sort of attest to that. So
oh gosh, yeah. Okay, you guys, that was segment two. It feels like it's like 3 minutes, but it's, we're having fun. It is Kelly. Brian's here, just, you know, we know where Brian is, right? In spirit. Yeah. Elizabeth, JD. And JD's website is, well, you have a bunch of them, but darlingyourenotalone.com is a really good one to promote. We'll be back. I always keep waiting for the little, hey, but it's always too long, so I never make it back. Hi, guys. It's Kelly, Elizabeth, and JD. We're just having coffee here, being curious.
Being curious, and we're back with JD.
Yeah, this is just
talking about his incredible book, Darling, You're Not Alone.
I'm flashing it one more time. JD, how many interviews do they sit there and flash the book like this? Like, right? I'm.
Never gets old, though.
No, it doesn't. Like, oh my gosh, I wouldn't think so. Like, it's fantastic. Do you know what? I love this font that you have at the cover of the book. Is that the font that you use for the hats?
No, it's not the same. Different designer, different sort of artist for the merchandise versus the books. But yeah, Nuno Moreira, my cover designer, he's so talented. He's all the way out in Lisbon, Portugal. Such an amazing artist, and I'm so lucky to have him do the cover for Darling. Yeah, I think it looks amazing too.
It is. It just you just want to open
the font. Yeah, I love the font.
Well, I'm in publishing in a magazine, so fonts to me, I'm a dork about fonts. I'm also married to a graphic designer and web designer who kind of took me to school on typography and fonts. And
fonts matter.
I liked Comic Sans for many years, and anybody that's in, like, that knows about it is just like, oh my gosh, I was one of those girls. That's okay. Fonts are stupid. Okay. So.
Yeah, well, I used to be in letterpress, so I have a deep love for it.
Okay, Elizabeth.
Mind your P's and Q's.
Ooh.
Anyway, so JD, one of the things that Kelly had that intuitive hit on, which sounds like it's manifesting, is that this should be in film. Like, she was like, before we got started on the show, and you said, actually, can you share what you're able to share about that?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, as I spoke about off camera a bit, it is sort of an evolving process. And, you know, anytime you're adapting a novel into a film, there's a lot of stuff that isn't exactly public yet, but it is a process we are going through for Darling, You're Not Alone. And I feel very fortunate to have the interest and people that are willing to get behind it and I want to support it in that way. And it's really exciting. And it's sort of one that I think sometimes I've learned as the author, I'm best served as taking a step back and letting the professionals that know the Hollywood industry have their input and just being a cheerleader and supporter. So I don't have as much day to day with the movement of it. But it's been really fun to meet some writers that are, you know, interested in like adapting my book and have some ideas and want to spend time with Phoenix and getting to have coffee with them and talk about it. And yeah, it's been really cool. So
that's incredible. I'm excited to see what that looks like, you know, and hope that they're able to capture the authenticity of Phoenix and stay true.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard. I mean, I think it's never going to be exactly as you intend and as pure as when you write the novel. But I think the you know, what also sort of like makes me rest easier thinking about it is just this idea that it's not gonna land as perfectly on the screen as it would on the page, but it will benefit a ton of people. And Phoenix will have a new life and be able to bring another perspective to anybody that sees the movie and then maybe wants to go and discover the book. So I think you have to sort of separate the two in a way that's healthy. And I think as the author, I have to tell myself that every day. It's like, hey, this is a different experience. So yeah, it's fun for sure, but it's stressful.
Hopefully they can highlight at the end writing thank you notes and yes, and darling, you're not alone website if it feels like it belongs there. What were you going to say, Kelly?
Well, I was thinking, I don't know why I keep seeing Netflix and I'm seeing there's movie, but what about having it like, you know, they have those long, those three-part series.
Yeah,
movies, limited series. That could be interesting, but that's just where I'm going. I would like to be an extra at Mia's place. Just
Maya's. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I wrote it down like phonetically. Maya's place. I want to be an extra in there. Like that would be cool.
Maybe we'll be extras together.
Yeah, maybe the three of us could be an extra at a table.
Yeah, that's what we need to do. I think that would be really fun.
I would love that. I love that.
I think that would be just fantastic. Okay, so Elizabeth, I know you have a question for JD.
Yeah, maybe for some of our readers, I mean listeners, sorry.
Readers, listeners, viewers.
All of the above. You could share just like a little bit about your writing process and how you keep yourself inspired.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's one that I was, you know, I was actually going to say this when we were talking about like leaving your characters once you complete a project. This is sort of another thing that I do that I think really helps me with both that and with staying inspired is I actually curate specific playlists for each book and I only listen to it while I'm working on that project. So like a good example is, and this is so funny, but I'm such a nut job. I love Pink Floyd and the song Wish You Were Here for whatever reason just really spoke to me while I was writing Darling You're Not Alone. And so over the span of like the 3 years I was writing that book, I listened to that song, I mean, like 8,000 times to put it at like a minimum. But since the book's been published and released, I haven't listened to it once. And I miss listening to that song for sure because it's amazing. But at the same time, that's just how I do it, is I try to really almost like capture that lightning in a bottle of what a song means to me for a book and a story. And then once it's done, it's done. And so I would say that helps me stay inspired is music.
Would you ever release the soundtrack for it?
You know, I did for my first book. I had a soundtrack for Moonflower and people really loved it. And I actually made like a whole playlist of all the songs I listened to while writing the book. For Darling, I just got a little bit busier with other endeavors like speaking events, interviews. And, I think my career sort of took a step that I wasn't maybe anticipating. So I haven't had quite the time to do that, but I think maybe down the road, if I release like a hardcover or a new release, I can do something like that. I think it'd be cool.
That'd be so cool.
I did just get a book from an author that she sent you the book, but then she actually created like a Spotify playlist that you should listen to at the suggestions at the end of each chapter, but then at the beginning of the book and the end of the book. So I thought that was really engaging on how they created that experience. And it'd be interesting. It's like you're playing Pink Floyd and you're like, okay, we're about to go into chapter three, listen to this, and then guide into the book.
That's his mood. Yeah. I think speaking of, like, as you know, it kind of segues well into the film side, right? Like, that's something I'll want to be involved with heavily when we talk about like a soundtrack for the movie, is that I would use a lot of the songs that I'd already curated in, like, for my first book, Moonflower, which was also, there was a shopping agreement for that novel to be turned into a film as well. And that's still being pursued in addition to Darling. That was one of the things the producers and I spoke about, is they're like, hey, we love the fact that you have all the music that you like and used. We want to keep that, you know, want to include that in the script. And so I actually worked with the writer on that and actually physically wrote in the song that would take place in each scene from when I wrote the book. So
you're like, okay, guys, you go to the production company. I need $1 million just for the royalties of the songs.
Just for what you're hearing.
Just
for
what
you're hearing. If you're listening,
please.
You got to strike some deal.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, you're like,
do you write every day? Do you find yourself? And like for the same amount of time, like some writers are really strict and some are more in the flow of like what their life is able to do.
Do you wake up in the middle of the night? Do you do it in the shower? I mean, I could just see you with pads of paper like everywhere. Do you dictate like what? Yeah, that's a great question, Elizabeth.
When I'm very disciplined and very intense about when I'm creating like the early draft. So as soon as I sit down to write page one of a new book, that process is every single day, no breaks until we go from line one to the end of the book, no matter what's going on and however long that takes. Once I get into rewriting and editing, that's when I'll sort of have pockets where I'll work on it. And then I'll have, you know, interviews and things like I'm doing today and traveling and things. So I won't be able to write on it every day, but it's more, I'm definitely disciplined about it when it comes to like the earlier story. Because yeah, I think that's the only way you can get through a draft is to be able to go straight through all, you know, till the end.
And do you like work out? Like, I mean, you have to move your body in some ways, like, cause writing is still such a physical thing, but I feel like you would, at least for me, maybe I'm projecting.
I work out like a maniac.
The page.
I was just in hot yoga this morning in there, like doing my core and my weights. And I'm in there 5 days a week and also Pelotoning. And yeah, I was a former college athlete and I feel like that never really leaves you.
No,
so that definitely helps actually break up my days with writing is like, yeah, so I'll get up, write for 2-3 hours and then yeah, go work out or go move my body or go do something. Probably go get more coffee. That's like an excuse of working out for me. And then come back and then get back into it. It's so physical, but it's also not. And you have to, like, I was actually just speaking with a writer recently. We were joking about how much we both love hot yoga and how odd that coincidence was, but we actually were able to put together that actually the reason we both really enjoy it is because it's so physically demanding that it's kind of the only time, I mean, truly the only time you're not thinking about the book you're writing, because it's so hot and you have to work out in addition to that.
Warrior pose with 210-pound weights for 4 minutes. Kill me.
Exactly.
Kill me.
Yeah, exactly.
I laughed the first time after I did. I was just like, oh, I can do this. This is easy. And then you're like shaking like a fish.
Yeah.
And you're like, so, I'm a college athlete and this is kicking my butt.
Yeah. No, for me, it's really hard. But yeah, the mindfulness aspect of it is really fun. And yeah, it takes you out of your own head, which you have to do as a writer for sure.
How do you unwind from college level, collegiate, amazing basketball to you graduate? You're not in the NBA. How do you keep that cadence in life going? Like, do you miss games?
What do you mean? Do I miss it?
Do you miss it? Do you miss the competitiveness? I don't think I'm asking you the right question, but like, how do you turn that off?
Sure.
Or how do you channel it into something new?
Ah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I think I don't miss it, to be completely honest, which is probably not normal. I think most players, former athletes, really talk about how they miss it and, you know, still play or go other ways to try and fill that void. But, yeah, I haven't had that itch to scratch at all. I really don't miss it. I don't even really think about it. Because I think for me, as successful as I was as an athlete and the heights I was able to reach, I really just felt so lucky to be there, to be on the team, to mm-hmm. be a part of the group. And I knew I'd sort of hit the lottery. And I sort of like, I felt like I cashed out at the right time and got out, knowing how competitive and difficult it is to play at that level. And yeah, I feel like I left it all out there, and I have nothing left to sort of explore, I guess. And I think to have neatly closed the chapter on that book was super healthy for me, in that now I have all these other things I want to try to accomplish and attack, and that's where all my energy goes. So,
well, and you didn't, your image and likeness is around your books, not around your
sports.
You were just shy of that.
Right.
Well,
right.
And you didn't end with an injury, and you didn't end with this, like, you got to the peak and then something derailed. It filled its purpose, and you did it, and you wrote it, and you finished it.
Full circle,
and it came full circle.
Yeah, which for most athletes, I don't think is the case, and they sort of have an unresolved, you know, thing. And I think for me, like, I remember my junior year talking to my dad on the phone. I'll never forget this, and saying to him, like, I don't know what else I have to do. Like, I don't know what, like, you know, usually you go into every season, you say, all right, this is the goal. Like, I want to start, I want to score this many points. I want to, you know, I was like, I have nothing. Like, I guess the goal would be to just do the same thing that happened this year. And I guess I hit that stalemate. Yeah. Where I was like, okay, I've done it.
Yeah.
I told my boys, don't peak in high school. They won the state championship. And I was like, don't peak in high school.
Congratulations, you, though. That's pretty cool.
It's amazing. But to you, don't peak in college either.
Right.
You
right,
know, like, exactly. We hope as humans we keep evolving, alongside Phoenix and all the great characters you have coming
for. For sure. For sure.
Okay, you guys, that's it. Woohoo! We did it! Okay. It is Kelly. It's Elizabeth. It is JD. Check out darlingyournotalone.com. I'm going to flash the book one more time. Awesome. JD, friend of the edge, friend of being curious.
Forever.
We support you. We adore you. And just please keep in touch. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Elizabeth, thanks for jumping in, lady. We just
thanks
loving
for
on it.
Me. And thank you, JD. Great to be with you again.
Yeah,
always a pleasure.
Being curious. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thanks.